Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Gary Null, nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about those promises that DDT was safe. It wasn't. I'll tell you about the latest of why we have a 400% increase in breast cancer risk for those mothers that were exposed to DDT. Trans fats, you've heard that they're being banned by the FDA. Well, I'm going to tell you some reasons why they should have been banned a long time ago, and what it does to your memory. And if you want a nutrient that can make an enormous difference if you have cancer, it's grapeseed extract. Comes in the grape, and there's new research on what it does. It's actually better than chemotherapy, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to hear from Chris Hedges from Truth Dig about America's electoral farce. I've mentioned many times that we get caught up in this kabuki of thinking it makes a difference if we vote for the Republican or Democrat. It doesn't, because the people who are most powerful, they support both. And it's their agendas and the corporate agendas that they control that are ultimately met. What about third-party candidates? I'll deal with that. Also, most people are not aware that after the earthquake in Haiti, there's a massive amount of outpouring of support and money. And one of the biggest recipients of that money was the Red Cross. Well, the Red Cross, according to this report from Justin Elliott and Laura Sullivan in ProPublica, they raised $500 million just to help rebuild homes in Haiti. We're going to show you how they did on that project. Also, about 3 years ago, I began to do a series of programs, not all that often, but enough to let you know it was still going on, about asset forfeiture, about how it had grown from a few thousand dollars to $4 billion a year. Now, mind you, we're not talking about assets from criminals or people convicted. We're talking about completely innocent people who the state, the police, would simply take your car, your home, your business, the money on you, anything they wanted, with complete impunity. Well, I'm going to give you an example of how this is still going on. The latest from Matt Agorist on Freethought Project. Cops in this small town, it's a tiny little town, they actually have 35,000 open arrest warrants. That's 26 warrants per citizen. Now, how's that possible? I'll explain that and why the privatization of the debtor's prison in the United States is so profitable for them and so harmful for others. Also today, for those of you who are still wondering, are cell phones really harmful? Because if they were, we would have heard more about this, and there had been some effort to limit our exposure. Well, you're going to learn from Dr. John Butcher, National Toxicology Program Associate Director of the National Institutes of Health, and Dr. Siegel Sadusky, Chairman of Sieben Medical Center in Israel, and the Cancer and Radiation Epidemiological Director, and Dr. Deborah Lee Davis, Epidemiology Professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and Dr. Olga Nadenko, Senior Scientist at the Environmental Working Group. You're going to hear them lay out, from purely scientific points of view, the dangers of cell phones and cancer. Also today, from J.P. Sears, How to Ruin Your Life. And I won't mention the name. Let's see if people in the audience know who this wonderful thinker is and his commentary. What's wrong with our culture? It's thought-provoking, and it deals with the state of the world from this man ahead of his time. So you see, we have a packed agenda. Let's begin. I remember at the very beginning of my career, when I was a consumer advocate, and I was the editor-in-chief of Caveat Emptor, Consumer Beware Publication, that was the foremost publication read by consumerists at that point in the United States. And I would do 2 to 3 articles per month. And one of the articles I was writing about was the dangers of DDT. So I wanted to get the official sanctioned truth about DDT. And of course, when I spoke with this particular professor out at UCLA, he says, it's so safe I could eat a tablespoon of it. And I said, well, I'm just concerned about how dangerous this chemical has been shown to be to eagles that will hatch, but there's no shell. It's just a fluid embryo, and they die. Or to all forms of amphibian that end up having reproductive problems. He says, that's all nonsense. And because that one man, he was one of the most important scientists in America, and his complete acceptance of DDT and the USDA's acceptance that it was non-toxic and the FDA that it could be sprayed and used on products, for another 7 years we used it in the United States. And then it was finally banned. I'll give you this from Public Health Institute at Berkeley, California, the university. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal of the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Quote, women who were exposed to higher levels of the pesticide DDT in utero were nearly 400% more likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer as adults than women who were exposed to lower levels before birth. A more estrogenic form of DDT that is found in commercial DDT was largely responsible for this finding. Despite being banned by many countries in the 1970s, DDT remains widespread in our environment, continues to be used in Africa and Asia, and many women who were exposed in utero in the 1960s when the pesticide was used widely in the United States are now reaching the age of heightened breast cancer risk. Now, DDT was among the first recognized endocrine disruptors, and that's according to the Endocrine Society's own research, and these are the leading endocrinologists in the world, and they interfere with the function of the hormone estrogen. And past studies have found DDT exposure is linked to birth defects, reduced fertility, cancer, and increased type 2 diabetes. Quote, this 54-year study is the first to provide direct evidence that chemical exposures for pregnant women may have lifelong consequences for their daughter's breast cancer risk. And that was from Dr. Barbara Cohn of the Public Health Institute of Berkeley. Environmental chemicals, quote, have long been suspected causes of breast cancer, but until now there have been few human studies to support this data. Well, now we have the human studies. So let's take a look at this. With the Susan B. Coleman and the American Cancer Society and the National Cancer Institute and all the other people who get lots of money for the war on cancer, when was the last time they told you to stay away from biphenyl products, plastic containers, especially those that are heated, like microwaving? People heat things in plastic, and that leaches in there. Those are hormone disruptors. And how many products we give our children that have these hormone disruptors in them. And then we have the chemical fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides and fungicides, hormone disruptors. They disrupt the hormones in bees, and hence they've led to bee colony collapse, the nicotinoids. So we now have the proof that we were lied to by virtually all of the corporate media and the medical establishment and the scientific establishment and the government bureaucracies. They all lied. They felt that it was better to align themselves with a corporate interest than with a woman, any woman, who was susceptible. So much for being objective. They're not. And I think that people should pay careful attention to that because, remember, if you didn't learn that lesson way back then, we are just susceptible today because we have 200 more chemicals than we did then, just as bad as DDT. But there is something good that is happening, and it's always good to share information that can empower people. The grape seed is an extraordinarily powerful healing agent, as is the grape skin. In fact, most of the benefit of grapes come from the seed in the skin. You'll get resveratrol, proanthocyanidins, polyphenols, and that's why drinking grape juice, organic grape juice, eating grapes, or having their powders are the most powerful thing coming from the grapes, and it's very beneficial to you. This is the latest from Health News, and it's about the grape seed extract, and here's what it has to say. Quote, conventional treatments will never cure cancer. This is not wishful thinking. Grapeseed extract benefits hold clinical significance. Unfortunately, cancer patients are often pushed to begin radical and invasive procedures, including surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, immediately following a diagnosis of cancer. And sadly, fear tactics are often used to rush people into risky, ineffective procedures, which are known to cause secondary cancers later in life. To be perfectly clear, although a majority of healthcare providers tout the importance of conventional therapy, there is little evidence that undergoing these harmful procedures can actually halt or even slow the progression of cancer cells. In fact, a study published in 2003 showed that chemotherapy was ineffective a startling 97% of the time. Later studies found that chemotherapy caused critical damage to the DNA of healthy cells and that some cancer treatment drugs actually cause cancer tumors to grow, sometimes at an alarming rate. Despite the growing mountain of evidence, the mainstream medical community continues to push chemotherapy and radiation as the only hope for cancer patients. Now, in the journal Cancer Letters is an article that shows that grapeseed extract was effective against colorectal cancer in experiments using cultured cancer cells. It also noted that grapeseed extract benefits increase with the higher stages of cancer, meaning the worse the cancer, the greater the benefits. Researchers at the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy and Pharmacological Sciences, AURA, tested the impact of grapeseed extract in colorectal cancer cell lines at several stages of the disease. They noted an increase in a number of anti-cancer mechanisms found within the grapeseed extract with increasing cancer stages. In contrast, chemotherapy has diminishing effectiveness with the advanced stages of cancer. Now, it's been known for some time that the bioactive compounds found in grapeseed extract have the ability to selectively target certain types of cancer cells. A study in 2012 showed that many of the same mutations enabling colorectal cancer cells to metastasize and resist conventional therapies are the very facets that make them sensitive to treatment with grapeseed extract. A similar study published earlier in the Journal of Carcinogenesis found that in both cell lines and mouse models, grapeseed extract killed head and neck squamous cell carcinoma cells without harming nearby healthy tissues. In that published paper, the authors know that grapeseed extract created an environment unfavorable to cancer cell growth. A study published later in January 2013, the journal Nutrition and Cancer found that grapeseed extract was also effective in treating prostate cancer, while a 2014 published study showed grapeseed extract to be effective against certain types of lung cancer. So, not just one or two or three or four, lots of studies on the power of grapeseed extract. So the rationale is simple. That which is natural and non-toxic that helps you improve or reverse a disease could also be used to prevent that disease. Now, no one ever would have surgery or radiation or chemotherapy if you don't have a condition, if you don't have cancer to prevent it. You would die from it. You would die from the radiation and you would die from the chemotherapy. But having vitamin C and cruciferous vegetables and fresh juices and clean water and exercise and stress management, clean up your environment and eliminate toxins, that prevents it. So that's important. Now, a few days ago, we started to see a campaign about how dangerous trans fats were and that the FDA said you've got 3 years to get rid of all of them. I did a program 20 years ago, an hour special on the dangers of trans fats. They didn't get any less worse during the last 20 years. It's just more people were exposed to them, and a lot more younger people were exposed. And unfortunately, the younger people were not being told the power of healthy eating. Instead, it was the convenience of comfort foods. This is from the University of California, San Diego. This is published in through their San Diego School of Medicine and PLOS One, Major Scientific Review. They looked at 1,018 men and women who were asked to be a part of this study, and here's what they have. Quote, dietary trans fats linked to worse memory, which means that the higher consumption of French fries, potato chips, pretzels, bagels, the very things that trans fats are used in all these processed foods, to improve taste, texture, and durability, has been linked to worsening memory in men 45 or older and younger. Okay, so, quote, trans fats were most strongly linked to worse memory in men during their higher productive years. That's according to Dr. Goldblum, MD, PhD, lead author, and professor of medicine, UCL, University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. Quote, trans fat consumption had previously shown adverse associations to behavior and mood and brain function. Well, think of all the people, including possibly some family members of people listening right now who have Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss, and yet they are eating trans fats. It's contributing to the problem. Now, one of the biggest problems we have in our diet is fructose. Now, there's two types of fructose. There is the highly processed fructose that you get as a white, granulated, nutrient, completely devoid sugar. And then you have the fructose as a natural fruit sugar as it naturally occurs in an apple, for example. Well, you can eat an apple and the natural fructose will be released along with enzymes and phytonutrients that help the body and provide a small amount of energy. There's a slight glycemic rise, meaning a blood sugar rise. Hence, it has a low glycemic index. And you want to consume foods that are low on the glycemic index because they will not spike the blood. Whereas if you took the same amount of sugar that's in an apple and you had it without the apple, and by the way, the fiber in fruits and vegetables help to bring down cholesterol levels, bring down sugar levels, and slow down digestion. But if you don't have any fiber, if you just had the pure product and you eat it, it's going to spike your blood sugar level. And that's a big problem. In fact, one of the people living in my building, I have two people on a special health program. And one of them had a lot of problems losing weight. Both are 45 and 50-year-old Latino gentlemen. Both were obese and both had diabetes and heart problems. And it was only when one of them had a real significant problem that he asked what to do. So I gave him a protocol. And today, he's lost over 100 pounds. His blood sugar is normal. His blood pressure is normal. And most importantly, he doesn't have any occlusion. And now, he's just as happy as he can be. And so each evening when I get my juices that I start my day with and end my day with, I always get an extra juice and I give it to him. And I tell him what's in it and I says, how you doing? He's all, you know, and he keeps showing me how he's lost weight. He feels great. But now he managed to motivate another one of his coworkers who has a health crisis and saw what he was doing. So he's starting to follow the same program. So this morning when I was coming to work, and I come to work very early in the morning, because I have a lot to get done, because I've been away for so long. I have so many terminally ill people I got to counsel. Plus, I'm finishing up a major book on women's health issues that I'm hopeful will be released in the next 6 months, and another film. So it's a long day. And so I have all the juices I take and fruits and different things throughout the day. And so I said, how's the blood sugar? He says, you won't believe it, Gary. He said, my blood sugar has dropped 150 points. 150 points. Yeah, it's now around 100. Well, you're in the good range. He's, yeah, could you imagine all that time having neuropathy and those problems and has on all those medications? Of course, when you're on insulin, you're going to gain weight. He's, but I've also dropped 21 pounds. He's, it's been hard. He's, I got to tell you, it's hard given up the carbs. He said, it's real hard. You know, we eat a lot of carbohydrates. And I said, well, the carbohydrates are not the problem. You can eat the carbohydrates, providing you eat them non-refined. Brown rice, not white rice. Beans are good for you. But you can't have the beans deep fried in pork and with MSG. And so when going over the diet of any culture, most traditional diets are very healthy, except for the English. There's nothing in their diet that's healthy and nothing that tastes good. Man, that's why they look so pasty. I mean, trying to find it was hilarious because I took my daughter. I said, where do you want to go on vacation? And she said, let's go to London. So we went to London, and which is one of my favorite cities. And I've been there, I guess, 30 times or more. And we love to go to the countryside and do the tourist thing and then rent a car and go off up towards Scotland and see the rest of the country and talk with just normal people out of the cities. And you start to realize this diet is heavy, heavy in fat, butter, and cream, and sugar. And you rarely find anyone who's healthy, except maybe an athlete. But even today, with all the knowledge we have about exercise and health, not healthy as a population, and lots of dental problems and rotted teeth. Anyhow, so we got the guide and asked the maitre d', where are the finest restaurants in all of London? So he gave us this list. These are ones that, you know, that if you want to eat, now they could be expensive. I said, I don't care how expensive. I just care about quality food. Every single one of them, I couldn't find one single thing on the menu to eat. Not a single thing. So instead, we went to Harrods. Now, if you've never been to Harrods, it is a hoot. It is worth just going to London. There are so many good things in London, but always go to Harrods, to their food court. Now, this food court dates back to the last century, actually almost a century and a half ago. And there, I've never in my life seen so many foods from so many countries in the world. And they don't have it like we have it. They have little tiny baskets. You know, the kind of basket that you would see someone coming out of a garden with flowers in, or maybe in a gourmet bakery, you'd see some loaves of bread in, something small. And that would be filled with a particular fruit. I counted over 50 fruits I'd never seen in my life, coming from North Africa, the Canary Islands, from the Middle East. And you get a little tiny brown paper bag, and you put stuff in it. And then you check it out. And it's just wonderful. They have a juice bar there, and they make any kind of juice or smoothie. But it's just a whole experience of the foods from around the world. We should have something like that. The closest we ever had to that was Balducci's, which was always a lot of fun to go down to because I could, when it was downtown, you could always find stuff that you would never see anywhere else. And I think that's one of the neat things about food is going to a Spanish market, an Indian market, a Korean market, a Chinese market, an Italian market, and finding foods that you normally wouldn't eat. Not the ones that are not healthy, but the ones that are healthy. In any case, took back to the hotel all this food, and there was a table with a vase in the middle, so I took off the vase, put all this down, and then just got a colander and made stuff right there in the room. Weren't supposed to. Management came up raising hell. We heard that you have all this food. I said, yeah, I got this food. You can't have that food. You know, we have restaurants downstairs. Well, there's nothing on the restaurant I'd want to eat. And in any case, we finally was able to keep the food. So, but England is the one country in the world where even their Neil's Yard, and if you ever go to London, go to Neil's Yard. Neil's Yard is just this ancient street. It looks like something out of an old English movie. And it has an apothecary and a health food store, but it looks like it would have in the 1800s. And you can buy all kinds of good stuff. But in their restaurant, most of it is carbohydrates. Every kind of bread and cake and puddings loaded with sugars and refined carbohydrate. And if someone wants to open a good business in London, I don't know how well they do, a gourmet vegan and raw food, combination raw food, gourmet vegan restaurant. It is desperately needed. And I know there are people from around the world who go there who also would like to have that. But the one they have is packed. But again, they're packing on the pounds. So here we have fructose. And fructose is everywhere. It's in all these foods. And it's terrible for you. This is from the Zurich Institute for Molecular Health and Sciences. And it's published in the most respected scientific journal in the world, Nature. Quote, walk through any supermarket and take a look at the labels on food products and you'll see that many of them contain fructose, often in the form of sucrose, table sugar. That's how Wilhelm Crack, professor of cell biology at the Zurich Institute of Molecular Health Sciences, summarizes the problem with today's nutrition. Prepared foods and soft drinks in particular, but even purportedly healthy fruit juices contain fructose as an artificial additive, often in high quantities. In recent decades, fructose spread throughout the food market due to a reputation as being less harmful than glucose. In contrast to glucose, fructose barely increases blood glucose levels and insulin secretion. This avoids frequently reoccurring insulin spikes after any glucose consumption, which are judged harmful. In addition, fructose is sweeter to the taste. But that's a downside. The liver converts fructose to very efficiently into fat. People who consume too much high fructose food can in time become overweight and develop high blood pressure and a fatty liver and insulin resistance, symptoms that doctors group together under the name metabolic syndrome. Also, there's an unchecked growth of the heart muscle. A new paper by Dr. Kreck and his team member, Peter Merchtink, describes it further. A more troubling side effect of fructose, the researchers have discovered a previously unknown molecular mechanism that points to fructose as a key driver of uncontrolled growth of the heart muscle, a condition that can lead to fatal heart failure. The study was recently published in Nature. When a person has high blood pressure, the heart has to grow as it is harder to pump the blood through the circulatory system. These growing heart muscle cells require a considerable amount of oxygen. However, since not enough oxygen is available to adequately supply the increased growth, the cell switches to an alternative energy supply. Instead of drawing energy from fatty acids, they rely more upon an anaerobic process called glycolysis, literally the splitting of sugars. If the heart muscle cell can access fructose in addition to glucose, this can set off a fatal chain reaction. And it goes on into greater depth on this. So, fatty liver disease, it's an epidemic. It's a pandemic in the United States. Not caused by alcohol, it's caused by fructose. And think of all the kids having all that sweet drinks and energy drinks with fructose as teenagers and then in college. And finally, from the University of Aberdeen in Scotland, two chocolate bars a day keep a doctor away. Quote, it is the ultimate comfort food and is known to produce the same chemical in the brain as falling in love. But now scientists have shown that eating up to two bars of chocolate a day appear to protect against heart disease and stroke. Previously, chocolate has been shown to reduce memory loss, prevent diabetes, reduce stress, protect the skin against sunburn damage, and lower cholesterol. And they looked at 21,000 people over 12 years, and they found that, quote, eating up to 100 grams of, that's 3 ounces, just a slightly over 3 ounces, of chocolate a day lowered the risk of dying from heart disease during that time period by 25% and lowered a risk of a stroke by 23%. Dr. Mint, professor of that department, says cumulative evidence suggests that a higher chocolate intake is associated with lower risk of future cardiovascular events. So that's good news. Now, make sure your chocolate bar is healthy. None of the refined sugars or dairy. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Yeah. Oh, baby. be free.
That'll make it all right. I know just how you feel. I wanna hold you tight.
But we've almost got it made. Now that we've caressed, a kiss so warm and tender, I can't wait till we reached that sweet moment of surrender. We'll hear the thunder roar, feel the lightning strike. At a point we both decided to meet, same time tonight. Hang on in there, baby. Hang on in there, darling. I'm gonna give you more than you've ever dreamed.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. And for those of you in other countries sharing ideas, we appreciate it, and that's why many of the topics we cover are important to you no matter where you live. And I want to thank all the people who came last night to the world premiere of Saving the Planet. It, as I mentioned to the people in the audience, it was packed. That is only part one of a trilogy. Every 6 months, I'll hopefully have the next part because it's so much information. And the issue is so great, the planet, the environment. I didn't want to overwhelm everyone by giving like 50 different things that are wrong and how to correct them. But we got a great response. Just such a good group of people. This was a fundraiser for the station, our sister station in New York City. Unfortunately, no one from the station showed up. No one from management, none of the hosts, none of the producers. That's all right. They'll still get a check today. And all, by the way, no one's ever shown up. Yeah, man, what a station. What a station. But in spite of how lacking in humanistic and spiritual values, we still believe in helping them. There's still something worth helping. And in fact, what we're going to do now is because they've run out of money and they're not going to be able to get your premiums, I'm sorry to say, in a timely fashion, we will be doing all we can in a constructive and creative way to raise money and just pay the premiums directly, meaning I'm going to start asking the station to send different shows premiums that they don't have money for, and we'll raise some money and we'll pay them. That's the only way that this is going to work, because if we don't pay those, the next time there's a fundraiser, and if someone hasn't gotten their premiums in the last 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10, who knows, then how likely are they going to participate again? We got to get up to date. And it doesn't seem like anything else is going to change, so this is what we're just going to have to deal with as long as we can. This coming Saturday, I look forward to being up in Woodstock. Woodstock's a wonderful place, lots of cool people. And we're played up there every day on Woodstock 104 FM radio. That's WIOF, 104.1 FM. And we're going to show the same film, 7 p.m., with a Q&A afterwards. I'll be there at the Mountain View Studio, 20 Mountain View Avenue, Woodstock, New York, just north of the Village Green. And it's a fundraiser for them, so they're suggesting a $20 donation. No one will be turned away, and attendees will receive a copy of the film, and then I'll have a chance to talk with them and hopefully grab a bite to eat. There is a very nice vegetarian restaurant there in the town, very quaint, small, quality food. So I look forward to this Saturday up there. Also, for those of you who are listening over the telephone, just keep in mind you can listen anywhere, and everyone should have this number, because you never know when you're going to have a trouble with your internet or your land-based station. Write this down so you can always listen no matter where you're at. 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. And just this morning at 4 o'clock, I posted over 100 articles. And I always try to balance wonderful, feel-good stories, people doing things for humanity, kindness. You cannot not shed a tear when you see these. And then some hard-hitting things, the brutality of our police, especially the police hurting innocent people, and the excesses and the corruption. And then nature scenes. I like to provide things that can give us a view of the world at its best, but let us be reminded of what needs to change. And I was just given the latest totals. And just in the last week, the 210,000 of you who visited the website for all the articles and on my Facebook, wow, just in the last 4 weeks, 1 million posts shared, just in the last 4 weeks, and over 100,000 downloads of my program. So we thank you for sharing the information. That's the object of the exercise. If you hear something, see something, read something you find empowering, please share it with other people. Now, we're going to go to Capitol Hill to a hearing that virtually received zero insight about the dangers of cell phones. And these are all independent, outstanding scientists in their field. So you don't get any stronger statements. And they tend to be very conservative in their positioning. So hear what they have to say.
There are an estimated 270 million cell phone users in the United States, about 4 billion worldwide. I would venture to guess that almost everyone in this room uses a cell phone on a regular basis, and most of us don't give a second thought that it could harm us in any way. However, a growing number of experts think there is cause for concern. Indeed, some international studies have suggested that people who use cell phones for more than 10 years are more likely to get tumors on the side of the head where they usually hold their phone. I hope today's hearing will begin to address that question. Our first witness is Dr. John Bucher, Associate Director of the National Toxicology Program, a cooperative effort between the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, the CDCP, and the FDA to coordinate toxicological testing programs in the Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Bucher, welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you. As you mentioned in your opening remarks, there's only been 10 or 12 years of exposure to these agents, and it's increasing dramatically. And there have been some hints recently that there is an increase in brain cancers in people who have used these cellular communication devices for a number of years.
What are the considerations with respect to an additional potential risk for children using cell phones?
Children have a configuration of their skull that does allow penetration of cell phone radiation deeper.
Are you saying there's a potentially greater risk?
I'm saying there potentially is a greater risk.
And what limitations, if any, then, if any parents are watching this on C-SPAN, what should they do?
I wish I had a good answer to that. I think
Well, would there be a precautionary approach? How about the use of earphones to minimize risk?
I think that's a good idea.
If they can do this, they would be better to have some kind of device like this.
As I understand it, yes.
Why hasn't there been done here in the United States to look at the epidemiology of brain cancer among cell phone users? And why aren't we a part of the Interphone collaboration?
Well, Senator, my understanding is that we do, in fact. NCI does support part of the Interphone study. The Interphone study is a large study in 13 different countries that is supported by or is being coordinated by the World Health Organization.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Dr. Sadetsky.
I'm currently engaged in collaborative studies of brain cancer funded, among others, by the NIH and the European Community. For over 10 years, I have been participating in research on the risk of tumors associated with cell phones, initially as the principal investigator of the Israeli part of the Interphone study, the largest collaborative study conducted today on this issue. And currently, I lead the Israeli team of another study, also funded by the EU, on cell phones and children, called MobiKids. In 2008, we published findings from the Israeli finding of the Interphone study suggesting a risk of salivary gland, located right here, salivary gland tumors among people who used cell phones for relatively long periods, when phone was usually held on the same side of the head where the tumor developed and when use was relatively heavy. It is my hope that the issue raised in this hearing will encourage you to promote research and take actions to ensure the safe and responsible use of cell phones. I would like to thank Dr. Deborah Davis, who invited me here, and I would like to thank you for your attention and for raising this issue.
Dr. Sadesky, thank you very much for coming a great distance, and thank you for your testimony. Dr. Davis, you said in your testimony, again, following up on this, is that you said that Interphone has studied people who use phones heavily for a decade, has found that where persons have used phones heavily for a decade or longer, there is evidence of significantly increased risk, literally a doubled risk of malignant brain tumors. The one researcher to have studied young people who began using cell phones as teenagers, Professor Leonard Hardell of Sweden, has found that those who started to use cell phones heavily before age 20 have 4 to 6 times more brain tumors by the time they reach their 30s. Can we get some documentation on that study?
Absolutely. In fact, I want to also tell you, unfortunately, that there has been a history here that I think we need to recognize. When Professor Henry Lai and Singh developed the pioneering new technique for measuring DNA damage called the COMET assay that shows you a tail of DNA when it's damaged, when they developed that assay in 1994, they showed that radio frequency exposure to brain cells of the rat could be damaging in terms of the COMET assay. The industry response, which has been documented and is in my book as well as other places, was this. First, they went to NIH and tried to get their funding revoked. Then they went to the journal that had accepted the article for publication.
Who they?
The industry working against seeing this work published. Then the same lobbyists tried to get the article unaccepted in a journal where it had been accepted. And finally, they hired other scientists to do advocacy research to try to invalidate the science. And when those scientists actually confirmed the work, it was never published.
What is the strongest evidence you have that exposure to a cell phone?
So those are some leading scientists from around the world, and you heard what she said. All of these panel of scientists from around the world said cell phones increase brain cancer. And the more you use it, the more likely you are to have brain cancer. Now, we're now seeing a big spike in brain cancer. I predict that we will have a mega epidemic of brain cancers in the next 10 years in the teenagers and college kids now because there's giving no warning. They're even using those little devices to go right in the ear. They're sleeping with their cell phones under their pillow. So if you want to do someone a favor and possibly protect their life, tell them to look at the information. We have multiple articles on our website against cell phone, and at least tell them to put it on speakerphone. You've got to have the cell phone at least a foot away from the body, 12 inches away from the body, and you can get an extension. So you have an earpiece in, but you hold it away from you, all right? But you heard what she said. They tried to, does this sound familiar? You tell the truth, and suddenly you got an advocacy group attacking you, or like an AIDS denier group out of San Francisco, out of KPFA. Does that sound familiar? Fascism replacing free speech. We'll deal with that on an upcoming major expose I'll be broadcasting. Let's see how well the people respond to that. Then look at Seralini, the man who showed you that the rats that lived their full lifespan all came down with cancers, including renal cancers. Got it published in a major peer-reviewed journal. They got it rescinded from the journal, attacked him, and another man who did the most definitive study on danger of GMOs, they got him fired the next day. Tony Blair was responsible for that. You know that little rat dog out of England? You know, the little diminutive prime minister? That if his IQ was any lower, he'd be a brick? You know, well, that. You know, that's like Saudi Arabia now going to the UN and say they want to be the head of the human rights division there. True story. They actually are going to. How many heads do you have to lop off before you get that job at the UN? We live in such a stupid place right now. So those who have been on the side of truth, and I emphasized this last night with great passion, go back in history. Who was advocating for civil rights, liberation of women, Native American rights? Who was advocating for protecting the soil and protecting animal rights? Who said that the pesticides were bad? That entire movement of millions of people were right, who advocated against the Vietnam War and the Iraq War and Afghanistan War. who advocated against the pipeline and NAFTA and GATT. Every single major political, social, health, and environmental issue, all of the people, the millions of people, advocates, scholars, have been right. And yet not once have they been given the credit for having been right. They continue to be denied any legitimacy and attacked on Wikipedia, in my opinion, the worst site in the world for anything quality information, and the Quackbusters, and that's the information used, including on non-commercial radio, to try to disparage those who've been on the right side of history. So she was just telling you what all of them faced, all right? And she laid it right out there. You heard her in her own words. Where did you read that? Now, I want you to hear from someone. I want you to hear from a man. I want to see if you know who he is. He's going to tell us about what's wrong with our culture. This is a man who, in my opinion, was one of the most prophetic voices of the last 50 years, a great man ahead of his time.
Why is it that we don't seem to be able to adjust ourselves to the physical environment without destroying it? Why is it that in a way this culture represents in a unique fashion the law of diminishing returns, that our success is a failure, that we are building up, in other words, an enormous technological civilization which seems to promise the fulfillment of every wish almost at the touch of a button. And yet, as in so many fairy tales, when the wishes finally materialize, they're like fairy gold. They're not really material at all. In other words, so many of our products, our cars, our homes, our clothing, our food, it looks as if it were really the instant creation of pure thought. That is to say, it's thoroughly insubstantial, lacking in what the connoisseur of wine calls body. And in so many other ways, the riches that we produce are ephemeral. And as a result of that, we're frustrated. We're terribly frustrated. We feel that the only thing is to go on getting more and more. And as a result of that, the whole landscape begins to look like the nursery of a spoiled child who's got too many toys and is bored with them and throws them away as fast as he gets them, plays them for a few minutes. Also, we're dedicated to a tremendous war on the material, the basic material dimensions of time and space. We want to obliterate their limitations. We want to get everything down as fast as possible. We want to convert the rhythms and the skills of work into cash, which indeed you can buy something with, but you can't eat it. And then rush home to get away from work and begin the real business of life, to enjoy ourselves. You know, for the vast majority of American families, what seems to be the real point of life, what you rush home to get to, is to watch an electronic reproduction of life. You can't touch it. It doesn't smell, and it has no taste. You might think that people getting home to the real point of life in a robust material culture would go home to a colossal banquet or an orgy of lovemaking or a riot of music and dancing. But nothing of the kind. It turns out to be this purely passive contemplation of a twittering screen. You see mile after mile of darkened houses with that little electronic screen flickering in the room. Everybody isolated, watching this thing. And thus in no real communion with each other at all. And this isolation of people into a private world of their own is really the creation of a mindless crowd. And so we don't get with each other, except for public expressions of getting rid of our hostility, like football or prize fighting. And even in the spectacles one sees on this television, it's perfectly proper to exhibit people slugging and slaying each other, but oh dear no, not people loving each other, except in a rather restrained way. One can only draw the conclusion that the assumption underlying this is that expressions of physical love are far more dangerous than expressions of physical hatred. And it seems to me that a culture that has that sort of assumption is basically crazy and devoted, unintentionally indeed, but nevertheless in fact devoted, not to survival, but to the actual destruction of life.
If you know who that gentleman was, let me know. And if you don't, I'll tell you in a few moments. Once again, what we're going to do is I don't have the full time I had last time because we're booked, but the second week of August, we're going to help some people in their journey of de-stressing, detoxing, rejuvenating, happiness, and just chilling out. And if they want to do more than that, they can. Because the staff that I've assembled from around the United States are the finest people I know. They're loving people. They're really good. And they can help a person reach another level of awareness if they choose to, through yoga, meditation, art and healing, cooking classes, farming classes, sprouting classes. You're going to see hundreds of trays of sprouts that you'll be eating and wheatgrassing and with ginger. And last night I made by the way, I took everyone who wanted to come out for milk and cookies last night. It was just something I thought would be fun. But it was rice milk and it was wheat-free, dairy-free, sugar-free cookies. But it was the conversation they had. It went on for hours. I got home like 12:30. But you couldn't get a nicer group of people. In any case, people are always curious when they what do you drink? So I made something I drink, you know, ginger, lemon, and wheatgrass, very powerful. So I gave everyone a sample, and boy, out of salt and pucker. Ooh, this is strong. Ooh, is there pepper in here? No, that's just ginger. That's what helps kill cancer cells. That's what helps you. Well, imagine drinking that throughout the diet. Imagine drinking juices all day. Imagine having gourmet vegan food. So that's what their treat's about. If you come with a good attitude, if you don't have a good attitude, there's no purpose in coming. You'd be wasting your time. And if it's about silence, there's lots of silence. We eat in silence or places that you can't talk because people have to realize it's the quiet mind that heals. The busy, chattering, constantly projecting mind doesn't. So keeping it to a healing energy environment where nature, and I tell everyone the first day, let nature guide you in this journey. Look at the eagles. Look at the beautiful tall trees that are, some are 150 foot high. Look at the swans on the lake. Look at the little animals and creatures. Now there's going to be little petting animals like little horses, little miniature animals people can bond with because that gets you out of one mind state and into a loving state, gets that oxytocin flowing. So that's what it's about, and it's the second week of August. Want to join us? Here are some people who did. And just a couple, we don't have a lot of time. I just want you to hear a few testimonials from just a few people from the one in April.
Hi, my name is Brian, and I want to thank Gary Null, Luann, and the entire staff for all their hard work. The exercise, organic food, the lectures, and the fellow retreaters made this just a great experience. And I feel for the first time that I was able to realign my energy with my authentic self. And I feel confident leaving here that I'm going home with clarity, inspiration, and amazing energy. Thanks, Gary.
Hello, I'm KB, and I cannot put into words the amazing and wonderful experience here at Gary Noel's retreat. I came here physically debilitated and today I feel 90% better. I'm able to do what I could not do before. I have participated in a race that I never imagined. imagined I would have been able to take part in. I would have never had the courage had I not come. I've learned so much, and now I want to be a viable part of my community as a result of the information I've gotten here. This is better than any vacation I could have ever taken anywhere in the world, and I've traveled the world. Now I know that life is about living, and I've learned how to do so here at this retreat. Thank you.
My husband asked me to say some things about his experiences here at the retreat this week. He wants to tell you that 5 years ago he was afflicted with a very devastating disease, and he hung up his tennis racket and his running shoes. Sorry. Last year he was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and when we arrived at the retreat, he really felt that he could hardly do the first day one lap plus three laps on the running track. But during the course of this week, he's gone from that to doing 18 laps today without trouble. And he's played tennis twice, and he's never felt better in his life or in 5 years. It's been a magic bullet, though he didn't think there was a magic bullet.
Those are just a few of the people. So you see, this is not just an ordinary place to go and do a little yoga, meditation. Some wonderful things can happen. It all depends upon the mindset and the openness of the people. We're there to help and facilitate. If you'd like to come, remember, this is so that we can pay bills for BAI. That's the whole purpose of it. But the side effect of it is a lot of people are going to leave with their lives changed for the better. Call Lou Ann Panessi at 631-504-6198, 631-504-6198. Lou Ann's in studio in New York. Lou Ann?
Wow, Gary. We have had a lot of people taking interest in this, and we're filling up quickly. And I'll invite everyone to give me a call. I screen everyone. I want to make sure that this is the right event for you. We're going to have fun. We're going to learn a lot. And as people have been saying, it's life-changing. I've been to so many of your retreats. And every time I leave with a, I feel like I'm a better person for just have being there. So I look forward to hearing from you. Call me, 631-504-6198.
Thank you, Lou Ann. Now a final comment. I believe that a lot of people are waking up to the fact that what we're seeing on television with this presidential campaign is just a farce, because we're not seeing the third-party candidates, the Green candidates, the Justice candidates, the Libertarian candidates, that at least people, whether you agree or disagree with what they have to say, they're saying something different. Give them a forum. We're not giving them forum. We're giving only the corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans a forum. I'm concerned. Chris Hedges is concerned. In fact, Chris said that he intends to devote no more time to the upcoming presidential elections than walking to his local polling station on election day, voting for a third-party candidate, most likely a Green Party candidate, and going home. Any further energy invested in these elections, including championing Bernie Sanders, and I've mentioned this many times in the program, is ill-advised. And because all that Bernie's going to do is validate the Democratic Party by becoming one of its presidential candidates, it's a waste of time. Now, every action we take now must be directed at ripping down the structures of corporate state. This means refusing to cooperate. It means getting off the grid. It means stopping banking in their banks, buying their clothes, eating their food. It means joining or building radical mass movements. It means carrying out sustained acts of civil disobedience, like they're doing in Seattle and fishing communities such as Kodiak and Cordova and Homer, as well as dozens of indigenous tribes, and they're doing it in Alaska, to physically halt gas hydrofracking and drilling for oil and natural gas, or the U.S. Navy training exercise in the pristine waters of the Arctic. Protest it. It means striking for a $15 minimum wage. It means blocking city streets to demand an end to the indiscriminate use of lethal force by militarized police, especially against poor people of color. It means, in large and small ways, acts of open defiance. It means always having as the primary objective the disrupting and overthrowing of corporate power. It means not playing in their game. As Chris has said, the corporate state seeks to get us to participate in a political charade of choreographed elections. It seeks to make us play by its rules. Our corporate media, flush with the dollars from political advertising, fills the airwaves with the ridiculous and the trivial. Candidates, pollsters, political strategists, pundits, and celebrity journalists provide endless loops of banal and absurd political chatter, all of it a grotesque form of anti-politics. We will be bombarded with this propaganda, largely centered on the manufactured personalities of candidates, for months. Tune it out. It means nothing. The voices of those who matter will not be heard in these elections. The marginalized and the poor in our internal colonies, the 2.3 million people in our prisons and their families, the Muslims we persecute here and in the Middle East, and the suffering of the working poor are airbrushed out of the discussion. In this Potemkin America, there's only a middle class. Our liberties, including our right to privacy, along with the consent of the governed, all of which have been taken from us, are held up in the electioneering farce as sacred and inviolate. We are assured that we live in a functioning democracy. We are promised that our voice will count. And even Sanders will tell you no different. If he stepped forward and spoke the truth, especially about the Democratic Party, he would be banned from the debates, vilified and crushed by the Democratic establishment, stripped of his Senate committee chairmanships, and tossed into the political wilderness in which Ralph Nader has been exiled. Sanders, unfortunately, lacks Nader's moral fortitude. He will, when it is all done, push his followers into the vampire-like embrace of Hillary Clinton. He is a Pied Piper leading a line of children into political oblivion. Political theater works because many in America have been systematically indoctrinated and severed from reality. Our corporate masters have built a mass culture centered on the cult of the self, unchecked hedonism and spectacle. Neoliberal ideology infects every institution and belief system. Those who suffer deserve to suffer. Victims are responsible for their victimhood. We've heard this so many times. We all achieve wealth and prosperity with hard work, so says Bill O'Reilly. But it's all a lie. This mantra permits us to be cruel and heartless to the weak and the vulnerable, especially the poor, as well as women and children, whom we discard as human refuge. Our warped neoliberal vision is defined as progress. In conclusion, America celebrates itself as virtuous and good while it inflicts terrible human suffering at home and abroad on those it deems unworthy of life. Let us think again before we again join in their parade. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.